there is so much opportunity there to either receive promotions in your current career, do a whole career change and get yourself into the world of IT like I did, you know, so many years ago. Changed my life, changed my family's life. There is that opportunity there for you again, but you actually have to reach out and take it and be purposeful about that.
Francesca, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. Absolutely delighted to have you here with me. Can you give us a little bit of an intro into you, your background, and what brought you here today? So, Francesca, over to you.
Sure, Georgie, and an absolute honour and a privilege to be on. I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and I don't normally get imposter syndrome, but I did listen to one with Catherine from EY, and I just am really a little bit nervous now, so just bear with me. But yes, I'm Francesca Salvo. The podcast probably doesn't have enough time to say Francesca the whole time, so you can also call me Chess, just not Fran or Franny, and we'll stay friends. But yeah, I got connected to you and your organisation in this podcast actually through our CTO for ANZ, Sarah Carney, who said these are amazing people you should get to know. And I guess in a roundabout way, that's how I made it here today.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, I'll make sure I don't call you those names. So Chez, yeah, lovely to have you on. And, you know, I think it's a perfect example what you just said then about the power of network, right? Because, you know, we both know, well, you obviously know Sarah better than I do, but Sarah Carney, CTO of Microsoft, an amazing female, Catherine Boychuk as well. Like, it's funny how like your network sort of molds and shifts and then you then opens up the doors to new people. Like just pausing there before we dive into your career, because this is something I always come back to. Throughout your career and if you reflect, how important has your own network been throughout your own sort of life and journey so far?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think if I look back to I've been in the IT industry for coming up to 27 years now, and I didn't realize how important it was in the early stages, right? And certainly being a very male-dominated industry at the time, I did not rely on the power of the sisterhood, if we can lean on that term, to actually help me progress my career at all. You know, fast forward to now, and I don't think there's anything more important, you know, than women who support or sponsor other women. And it has certainly been a bedrock of the more recent roles that I've had. And, you know, I'm now in the privileged position where I can do the same for other women, both in the industry and outside of it.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And like you as well, I don't think I properly really started taking this seriously until like my sort of, I guess, mid-30s. That's where I was like, right, I really need to invest. I've got a lot of contacts, but not, I think when you know you've got someone as a really good contact is when you call them, they look at you and go, oh, I want to pick that up. It's Georgie. And I feel like I had a lot of acquaintances, a lot of people who knew me, but not a lot of people that probably really liked me because they didn't really know what I was about. So I think that that's where I've really tried to focus on over the last sort of like number of years. But take me back, Chez, take me back to early years. You've been in the industry now in IT for 27 years. That's a long time. So you've seen a lot of change during that, I'm sure. Take me back to the early years. What got you into IT in the first place?
Well, for anyone who's coming up in the industry, don't listen to this because it's not the right way to go about it. I fell into IT. I actually didn't know such a thing as an IT industry existed. One was pretty much out there, but, you know, I thought maybe I'll go and be the next Mariah Carey. That was probably a bit ambitious. Then I thought, you know what, I was madly into AFL at the time. I was only seeing male journalists and I thought, that's it, I'm going to be the first female sports journalist. Then I slept in for the journalism entrance test, or the JET. And they only come around once a year at that time. So that was off the table. And I was kind of just doing bits and bobs here and there till I worked out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I had a friend whose father was a president of APJ for a CAD company, computer aided design. Shout out to Bentley Systems, Ian Hemming. He's well retired by now. But and he said, look, my dad's looking for an EA. Would you go and do that for him for a little bit? And I thought, sure. No idea what the industry was, no idea what Bentley Systems did. And I guess I could almost say the rest is history, but it's certainly not. But, you know, being an EA for a president at that level, sitting in on the meetings that he took, you know, with customers, I learned a hell of a lot about business in general. I learned a hell of a lot about, you know, engaging with executives. And that provided me with opportunities following that to actually get into the industry. And I took those You know, I never thought I'd be in IT, but here we are.
Yeah, I can imagine that was really powerful. It's like getting in the rooms at that young age and witnessing the negotiation, the conversations, the business chat. That would have been so invaluable. And I think that this is what I say to like sort of the younger generations, like try and put yourself in these rooms early on. And even if that means, you know, sort of like at an entry level, a graduate level or an EA level, get yourself in the rooms, get yourself where all the decisions get made. So
Georgie, if you don't mind me interrupting you for a bit, I think there is more goodwill and intent than ever to help people do that, right? But I look at what I do now and I have no qualms whatsoever asking an executive, can I bring XYZ into the room for a learning experience? I've never had a no from an executive on that, right? They love it. They absolutely want to be part of bringing, you know, forward the future generation who are going to be leading us. So, yeah.
That's it. It's that whole sort of like giving back. So when you talk to me through then, so you started as an EA, then how did you transfer that into, what was your first like tech role, if you like?
Training coordinator. Yeah. So the person running the professional services business at the company thought, you know, hey, you know, this person's got some skills and, you know, they were searching for a training coordinator at the time and they took a chance that they could embed the skills in me rather than going out to market. And we all know how long it takes, you know, from hire to becoming productive, and they took a bet that actually I could be productive quicker and could actually do the job. So yes, I went on to do that, and then the head of their change practice went, oh, I think I could use you here. And again, upskilling on the job was what sort of landed me into that role, and in fact my next few roles, which was in change management and then morphed a little bit into org design, which I still love today and I think is incredibly relevant to the world that we find ourselves in now and how AI is changing operating models.
And we're going to go on to talk about that for sure, because it's something you and I are very passionate about. But I'm also just sort of like trying to join the dots here as well, because we talk a lot about on this podcast transferable skills. And as an EA, you have to be incredibly organized. You have to listen. You have to be really aware of what's going on and what sort of end goal is. And I can imagine that then worked really well as a training coordinator role. And then what got you into change? Because I'm always trying to piece together, because when people think tech, they think they've got to have a software engineering degree. They've got to go and get all these qualifications. But actually, there's so many skills that we have already that we can use in tech. So if someone's listening to this right now and they want to get into tech, I'm curious, what do you think are the top sort of transferable skills that are really necessary in this new sort of technology world we find ourselves in?
Sure. I do want to pause on the listening bit as an EA for a while there, because I think tech or any field that you're in, listening can be one of the hardest skills to master. You know, even if you're really desperately trying to listen, we generally have something that we want to get across, we want to say, and it's really hard to really empathize or deeply understand with what that other person's saying so that we can respond in kind rather than what we're trying to say. So I actually think listening is a vastly underrated skill, and something listening with empathy as well, like putting yourself in that executive's shoes, that customer's shoes, and actually trying to imagine, wow, this is what they're actually trying to solve for. And it's obviously top of mind because they're talking to me about it. How can I deeply understand that, resonate with that, and advocate deeply to help solve that problem for that individual? So listening for sure. Learning, I can't, you know, it's, we talk about growth mindset, you know, failing fast, experimenting, being prepared to move on. We also talk about learning mindset now being one of the critical skills, but someone said something to me the other day and I love it and I keep reusing it, about learn, unlearn and learn. So it's not just about learning now, it's actually about unlearning what you thought was right and then being prepared to actually move forward with that. So absolutely learning. And then I think empathy as well. I know I said it sort of in some of the other ones, but empathy is incredibly important because for me at least, it drives a lot of what I do. It will drive the energy I put into a project. It will drive the energy that I can try to bring to lead others along that project. So empathy as well.
And it's this, the word empathy comes up a lot when I'm meeting hiring managers. They're looking for new people, especially leaders. We want people who can, yes, communicate, think strategically, have some of the hard skills, but really have that strong sort of like, yeah, the understanding of people, the empathy is coming up more and more, especially as we move into this tech-enabled world. So talk to me, you went from change management. Now, your current role at Microsoft, I would love to dive into that. What does a typical day in the life of Chess look like now? And how has all of like the skills you've accumulated helped you step into that role?
Sure. So I've got sort of two hats that I wear at Microsoft now. One of them is the Industry Solutions Director, which is essentially, at the crux of it, selling software and services to our top customers in Australia, which we call our enterprise customers. And the second one of those is leading our Victorian branch here, which shout out to those peeps as well. We have the most awesome branch in Australia. I'm very competitive. And I don't mind saying we've got the most awesome branch. So day in the life of very much, you know, two-pronged. I'm thinking about our people in the branch. I'm thinking about how they're connected to our purpose, how they're connecting their own purpose to what they do. How we can keep people connected in this hybrid world of work, because I do think it's so critical, right? I mean, I think look back on my career and not realizing it, I really benefited from those cooler conversations, from me being able to go attend meetings, from just sitting in on a meeting and listening to these, you know, icons of the IT world talk about, you know, what they were doing and how they were bringing solutions to their customers. So I think it's so important to still be around your colleagues, to still be around your customers. And that's a big part of what I do in the Melbourne branch role. Right now, I'm also looking after Coles directly as a client. I hadn't for quite some time, but it is actually giving me so much energy to be back working alongside a customer. So if I look at a typical day there, it's very much understanding what their strategic priorities are at the moment, not trying to scuttlebutt them with, but we could do this and we can do that, we can do this, because I think at Microsoft in particular, we can think we can be all things to all people. And it's really hard to sort of pull back from that. And again, thinking deeply about listening and empathizing with the customer. How can we truly have an impact on solving that problem or their customer's problem? And how can we bring back that to bear? And one of the biggest things at Microsoft is we have so many amazing resources. Like they're coming out of the woodworks. You know, we've got amazing corp resources. We've got amazing local resources. But actually finding the right resources and bringing those to bear for a customer is actually quite a skill here at Microsoft. So orchestration of those resources is probably one of the key skills that I use there.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a couple of ways I want to go with this now, okay? So this is really good. So I want to come back.
Can't be all things to all people? Maybe don't go too far that way.
Well, I want to come back to this, the Microsoft partnership with Coles, because I think that's really interesting, because I think like there's a lot of people that are in smaller companies right now wanting to really think about how this new tech and what they can be doing to really future-proof their business and things. But I want to just sort of touch upon something you said here, because this plays on my mind a lot as well. You mentioned the people aspect and the hybrid piece as well, because like you, Chez, a lot of what I know now was caught, not taught. And what I mean by that is I learned a lot by watching, by listening, by looking around me and learning from other senior consultants in recruitment, as an example. And I am a big advocate for hybrid. There is no need to be in the office 5 days a week. That's personally what I believe. I have actually always worked hybrid. But I do think there is a place for going into the office and being around your colleagues, because I also think you can learn from others that are, you know, more experienced than you. Where do you see the world of work going? What's your personal thoughts on what do you think like the future of work looks like from that stance? We do live in a technology-enabled world. Do you think we're going to, is hybrid is here to stay? Do you think we're going to go fully remote, or do you think we're going to be back in office 5 days a week? What's your thoughts?
Okay, these are my personal thoughts, because certainly we have lots of customers who have the full spectrum of the hat, and I don't want to offend anyone. So I do believe the world of hybrid work is here to stay. Now, I've worked in IT most of my profession, and I'm lucky enough to probably have worked hybrid for the majority of that career, because we already had the tech enabled to allow us to do that. I also think that if you want to get access to the best talent, you are completely dismissing a whole bunch of people and talent that you could utilize if you decide that they need to be in the office 5 days a week. And I think, again, personal thoughts, I think you do that to your detriment, right? We want to make sure that we've got all the skills and represent our community. If we're then leaving behind a whole demographic of people who can't make it into the office every day. So I do think it's here to stay. I think I really like, and I will bring Coles up again in this example, because they were quite famous when, you know, a few months ago when they said that they were moving to a new office and that they wanted their employees in 3 days a week, and one of those had to be a Monday or Friday. And it did stir up, you know, a little bit of media attention, so I'm not, you know, speaking out of turn here. But what I really liked about what they have done, and yes, in some ways it can be confusing because policies are changing, you know, daily, but they are really listening to their employees and they are amending those policies slightly to make sure that they are making the most accommodations possible so that they are making it easy to both, you know, listen to what their team members are wanting, but also setting themselves up for a future where they can still have access to the best talent. And I think we feel the same here at Microsoft. We haven't mandated any days back in the office, but certainly if I look at, you know, our leadership here locally and my role here in the branch, we do want people to come back to the office, right? And it's not 5 days a week, you know, certainly not even, you know, 4 days or, you know, 3 days, but be with your customer, be with your colleagues at least some time of the week.
Yeah, I think me and you are completely on that same page then. I just think it's really important, but I'm quite an extroverted personality. Yeah. I you don't want to, like, you know, I guess pigeon yourself, but I like being around people is what I'm saying. So I do get sort of lifted up by being around, you know, my business partner, Pam, and the team. But I also love my days from home where I can just get stuck into a project and I have no distractions. So I think there's a place for both. And I don't want to see the world go backwards. That's my ultimate biggest fear. And I think, like, big brands like Microsoft, Kohl's, you know, all these bigger organizations, people look to them, what are they doing? And if they start all of a sudden being like 5 days back in office, that's when we're going to have problems. That's when everyone else is going to say, well, Microsoft's doing it, Amazon's doing it, da-da-da's doing it. We therefore are going to do 5 days a week. And that would be, in my personal opinion, such a tragic way of going, especially as we now live in the tech-enabled world where literally people could probably soon work on the moon and still have good Wi-Fi. So, yeah.
Well, that's right. Or in the virtual world, right, which was, yeah, exactly, was chatted for a while. I'm calling your statement the Peter Parker statement. So I hear you on that, but I also want to pick up on, yes, and I consider myself an extrovert too, but we do have a lot of people who would, I guess, identify as introverted in the office. And I do a lot of listening to our teams, and those people are enjoying coming back into the office. We've got over 1,000 engineers in Australia. A lot of them are choosing Melbourne as their home now that it doesn't have to be very location specific. And they can't get any work done when they come into the office, right? Because they're used to sitting with their 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever screens and just getting shit done. Or am I allowed to say that? I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. But anyway, you know, but they're coming into the office at least one day a week because they're getting so much energy from being around people, introverted, extroverted or not. And we're, you know, we've got grads coming through again. We've got interns coming through again. They're playing the Xboxes, you know, they're eating all the food in the kitchen, right? But it's just, and we're getting so much energy from that as well. So I think it's a two-way street, and, you know, introvert or extrovert, there's still human connection to be had.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's going to be more and more important as we do sort of, like, I guess technology becomes such a bigger part of our world. Going back then to, I wanted to touch upon that because I think that's still a really important conversation that keeps on coming up a lot with, like, candidates and clients I'm speaking with. So interesting to get your perspective there. Coming back to Kohl's, like, what are you seeing? Like, Kohl's, massive organization, you know, I can imagine, like, where the tech's going. There's so much they could bring in to boost their sales, you know, understand their customers, provide a better customer experience. What are they? So, and obviously, don't give away too much information. I'm sure some of it's confidential, but also organization like that thinking when it comes to AI and all the things that could be implemented. Where are you telling them to start?
Yeah, so I will focus on that information that is in the public domain, and, you know, they had the investor strategy day recently, so I'll draw on that. But no, Kohl's is very focused on providing value for their customers, right? So I think if we look at the customer journey in general, they're very focused on where they can provide the best value for their customers in that. And then obviously the suppliers come into that mix as well, right? And how they can make sure that they're providing the best of both worlds. So AI is a big topic in the areas of personalization right now. So how can we make sure that customers are actually being provided with the most relevant offers to them? And I will stay away from the supplier topic just right now, if that's all right. But also, we look at, you know, team members. Team members are incredibly important to Kohl's. You know, they sit between 110,000 and 120,000 team members. A majority of those are on the front line, you know, with also a lot of them sitting in the Kohl's store support center. So They are also very focused on how can they make their team members' lives more enjoyable, because it's not just about efficiency and productivity. And of course, Coles is, you know, are very focused on that because they've got shareholders, and the better price they can bring for their customers, you know, the better for all of us, let's be honest. But there's also how can we use the technology and AI to improve their team members' lives and to help them focus on things that are more strategic rather than tactical that maybe AI could do for them.
And this is going to be such a massive conversation in all businesses right now.
I'm
still deciding upon where I can see all this going. I think that there's going to be businesses that just go, let's just get AI in and let's get rid of all of the roles that AI can do. I think there's going to be businesses that do that. I think the big businesses such as like, you know, Coles and even Microsoft, you know, they have a responsibility to, I guess, lead the way in this digital transformation, this AI transformation, and showcase what can be done when, like you say, you give the employees in the business better tools to be more productive, to make their jobs more enjoyable. I can see that that could be a really strong focus and a narrative that comes out. But I also think that some other companies are going to be like, how can we cut the fat, get AI in and save a ton of money? What are your thoughts there?
So, and again, you know, this, my personal thoughts, I think let's start with the latter of what you said. I think there's a lot of companies looking to do that. But it will be interesting to see the first company that comes out and said that right in the annual general report, because people are talking about efficiency and productivity right now, as well as the enjoyment angle. I don't think there's too many people that are prepared to say we want to cut X amount of jobs with AI. And if you look at Coles in particular, that's certainly not any of the narrative. As you say, they do have responsibility. They're one of Australia's largest employers, and they're certainly not out there to, you know, reduce jobs and, you know, reduce the level of service that they give to their customers. So I think a lot of companies are looking at it that way. They're just not saying it right now. But I think that has to come into the mix somewhere, right? AI is in some ways costing more, and there's only so much that you can do in terms of reducing, COGS to actually then get the benefit of AI. And at some point it's going to, you know, all smash together and they're going to, oh, we need to improve our profit. So what do we do, right? So I think companies are going through the full spectrum. There are some companies that are like, let's just get it out there. Let's experiment. And there are lots of people that are experimenting heaps, but I'm not seeing those use cases move through into production or delivering benefits. And I think that's largely because maybe they did jump in without setting up some of the necessary guardrails or thinking deeply about the ROI of some of these use cases that would actually drive a business case through to production. You've got the other end of the spectrum where everyone's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be in the news for this stuff. So let's spend the next 2 years setting up a center of excellence and a council and a governance. And let's make sure we've got, you know, 99% accuracy before we even do any of these AI use cases. So I personally believe companies need to find the balance and understand, you know, two things. What are they trying to do with AI? You know, are they using it to drive efficiencies? Are they using it for a competitive differentiator? Most will probably be doing both, but pick those things that really matter and actually start, you know, really heavily experimenting on that, and make sure you've, garnered your support for that before you do it, because there's nothing worse than, you know, proving a successful use case with all the ROI there and it gets to the board and they're like, oh no, this is too risky. We're not going to do that. Does that make sense, what I just said? Did I answer your question?
No, you did. I think it's like, it's going to be interesting to see how companies do embed this technology into the workforce and what that looks like. Because you're right, no one wants the headline of Coles lays off 50,000 of their staff and implements AI.
Make that a soundbite, yes.
No. But you know what I mean? Same as Microsoft. Like, but then... there's just stuff's happening every single day. Like I saw an article, something got leaked from Spotify, basically just saying like if his staff aren't upskilling in AI, they're not going to be in the company. And then Salesforce came out to say that they weren't going to hire any more engineers. So you're hearing all these sort of headlines, right? But again, I'm really making sure as I'm going through this as well, I'm not just reading the headlines.
Yes.
I'm reading the subtext as well. I'm educating myself. I'm like, okay, that's the headline. That's all the doomsday scrolling stuff. But actually, if you peel behind the layer, it's actually, there's going to be other things that these engineers can upskill in. But I do think that this is such an exciting time. This is why I keep on saying to people, for example, I haven't written a line of code in my life, nor has my husband. We literally spun up a website over the weekend. And okay, it wasn't the most fancy website, but I was blown away. I was like, oh my God. It literally was just coding. It was going away. I was like,
yep,
this is crazy. And exciting. I just thought, oh my God, there's so many opportunities for people now. So I'm curious, what do you see, like, who is going to benefit from this the most? What type of person, what type of, like, I guess, individual is going to really do well in these next sort of 5 to 10 years, in your opinion?
Yeah. So maybe starting with a little bit of, you know, being worried or fearful about it is not going to change what's coming. Mm-hmm. I do believe that, right? So I think, you know, you spoke a little bit about mindset before. I think someone who does have a growth mindset, a learning mindset, someone who's prepared to experiment is going to benefit the most from that. Now, I'm not a very creative person myself, so I'm actually really enjoying the fact that, you know, some of these AI tools can be a bit more creative on my behalf, and then I can actually put my chess flavor into it, right? My skills gets probably more about execution and bringing people on a journey rather than coming up with some great ideas. I've got team, like wonderful team people to do that, right? But AI can help me do that. So I think that's one thing. I also think that a lot of leaders out there think that it's someone else's job to educate them. So if you're in any type of leadership role and you're sort of waiting for someone to come and tell you what you should do, or you can get the best bang for buck for this, and how about you do this? Yes, you'll have heaps of people to do that. But, you know, we've been running something called the Work Trend Index for a number of years now. As you can imagine, the last 2 years have been quite heavily focused on AI. But what has been consistent in the last 2 years, and actually is even more prevalent now, is the imperative of business leaders to actually understand what AI is and what it can do. RMD Stephen Worrell says this quote a lot, and I should know where he got it from. I'm sure Copilot will help me with that later. But, you know, he says, organizations don't change, people do, and leaders go first. So, you know, I think it's really important that someone who is prepared, like, you know, coming back to the skills, be prepared to get your hands on the tech. I think everyone has had a go at ChatGPT, right? That was 2 years ago now. Just think of everything that has, you know, come to market since then. And you still need to be in that mindset where you need to understand the tech, you need to understand the opportunity of the tech, and you need to be able to be prepared to lead people through the change and what that opportunity is.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you see much resistance to it? Like, do you see, like, when you're meeting people, sort of like whether it's at your account, whether it's even like, you know, you work in tech, I'm sure you've got friends and family members. Yeah. What's the sense that you're sort of getting from people in the market?
Yeah. So I'll start on the friend side of things, because I think they pretty much start every time we meet with, you're not allowed to say AI, and you're not allowed to say Copilot at the start of any event. But, you know, like my husband, for example, has never used Copilot. Now, I don't know whether that's just because he's, you know, doing it to be mean to me or he doesn't, but, you know, he's the kind of person that's like, I don't see the benefit in for me. I'm not even going to try it. My babysitter, who is just turned 60, can't get enough of it. Like, she will come every morning and tell me the latest thing that she's been able to do with it. And, oh my God, you know, she's, you know, working on some legal thing with a property overseas. And she's like, oh my gosh, it wrote this whole thing for me. You know, she's just bursting with excitement over it. You know, I've got friends in academia who are like, oh, I just wish that they would, you know, be getting in front of this and how we can use these kind of tools to help improve citizen outcomes, you know. And then I've got the others who are just, you know, a bit of a smattering. And if their company kind of forces them to learn about it, they will. So the full gamut's there in my friendship circle, and the full gamut's there in the corporate world, right? In exactly the same way, I would say I'm seeing that across customers. Where it's pretty much universally accepted is in the younger generation, right? And I'll speak about my kids in primary school. You know, I was rushing out on April Fool's Day And my daughter, she's 10 years old. She said, "Oh, Mum, can you give me some ideas, you know, for pranks I can do for April school?" And I'm like, "I'm so sorry, honey. I'm right. Why don't you ask Copilot?" And then she goes, she asks Copilot, gives her some ideas. She's like, no, that's like, I can't do those at school. So I said, well, tell them how old you are. Tell them that you want to do it for a school prank so you don't want to get into trouble. And, you know, so then she's iterating on that prompt so that she could get this list of, you know. So, I think I'll come back to the leaders. You know, you're never going to get everyone, but if you've got someone who can lead through and do that at scale, I think that's where the real change is going to happen, certainly in corporations. Personal life, I don't even know what I'm having for breakfast tomorrow, let alone what that's going to do to the rest of the world, but yeah.
I know. And probably quite similar to you, I've got a lot of friends that are really nervous about their jobs. Like, you know, is this going to take my job? Then I've got other friends that are literally using it every single day to help them get ahead, to write proposals, to get promotions, you know, like asking ChatGPT, like, this is how much I'm on. This is where I want to go. Can you give me a career plan? How would I do this? And I just think, like, you can see those that are going to really sort of excel in the next 5 years. And I just don't want to see anyone get left behind, especially women.
Yeah.
Because Jess, I'm sure you've seen it throughout your career as well, right? You've probably been in the room where you've looked around, you've been the only woman. I know I have, right? What would you say for the women listening to this podcast right now? Like, why as females can we not just watch on the sidelines while this technology goes into the hands of the same people that, you know, sort of took off social media, the internet? Like, what do we need to do as women to make sure we don't miss out on this next tech revolution?
Yeah, great question. And just to start off, because it is a sobering thought and it is a message that I really want to land, and I'm going to lend from a story that actually Sarah Carney told when we were having a bit of a sit down about the metaverse, right? Metaverse has been around for a while. And we were talking about, you know, the potential impact of the metaverse on society and then females in general. And it was an incredibly sobering thought, because when you look at the metaverse and who has cryptocurrency in the metaverse, women are already by far falling behind. And I thought about that and I thought, wow, what a sobering thought, you know, for people not to have, for women not to have the same salaries as men, to not have the same assets as men, not to even know about cryptocurrency so that they can actually now be thinking about, should I be thinking about that? There is the potential to go through that cycle all over again with AI. And we know that, you know, outcomes are far better reached and far better serving for the community when women are involved in those decisions, in those professions, and actually representing, you know, a more whole community. And that goes the same with, you know, many of the groups such as, you know, cultural diversity, people living with disabilities, you know, the LGBTI community, et cetera. So focusing on women, I think it's, again, don't take my example of just falling into it. Be purposeful. You know, there is so much opportunity there to either receive promotions in your current career, do a whole career change and get yourself into the world of IT like I did, you know, so many years ago. Changed my life, changed my family's life. There is that opportunity there for you again, but you actually have to reach out and take it and be purposeful about that. If I think about some of the offerings that sort of we provide or those that we partner with, there are a huge number of free skilling opportunities available specifically to women, whether that's women looking to get back into workforce, whether that's migrant and refugee women, whether that's women that's already in the industry. And I could rattle off a few and let me know if you want me to come back to those, Georgie, but the opportunity is there. There are certainly enough organisations who don't want women in particular to be left behind are investing heavily into making sure that the opportunity to skill up in AI is there for women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've touched upon something important as well, because when I was sort of like really looking into like Web3, you know, NFTs, and that was a really big thing as well. Yep. And crypto, and look, I do have cryptocurrency. I've got Bitcoin, I've got Ethereum. I bought some NFTs as well. And I got quite immersed in the space, because again, I'm if it's out there and there's money to be made, and I'm curious, I'm like, cool, what is this new currency and how is this going to play a part in our society and our life? But every single exchange or wallet I went to, I was like, this is not built for females. This has been built by a man. the colors, the everything about it. I was like, this is gross. This just looks horrendous. I was like when I sat down with my husband, I was like, right, I want to understand this. Take me to an exchange. I was like, what is this? And I thought, if I didn't really want to do this, if I wasn't really curious, if I didn't see this was going to be an important part of the future that we're going to with digital currencies and all of that, I could have so easily given up because it was not easy to use. It was complicated and it looked like I just thought this is so ugly and unappealing to me right now. And I thought, thankfully, I had a really amazing partner who wanted to talk me through it and get me into it as well. And I wanted to, but that's where it needs to start. It's the whole user experience. It's the whole journey of everything. And if we don't have females developing these new products, these new AI tools, it's going to end up like it was with Web3 and crypto.
Absolutely.
All looking the same, all with the same colors, not appealing to women and young girls, complicated. And I just don't want to see that happen.
Yeah. We've hit on something also near and dear to my heart because, you talked about having women actually helping to build these platforms. And I think that is something that's being deeply thought about in the community at the moment. Certainly something we do at Microsoft to, before we ship product is make sure that people building these products are coming from different lived experience, different demographics, et cetera, because AI is not going to help you with that otherwise, right? I even look at one of the CTOs told me a story and, probably shouldn't be saying it, but they were using DALL-E to create an image for a presentation that they were going to give. And the message that they wanted to land was, how do you be a successful CTO? Think like a CFO. And it asked DALL-E to create an image for him of a CTO and a CFO. Lo and behold, what comes back? Pale, stale, middle-aged white males. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that. But, both males, both white, some with glasses on. That was a CTO and the CFO. And then he said, well, can you make one of them a woman? Comes back with this busty image of a woman, with the glasses. And I'm like, I'm listening to him and I'm horrified because this is on our products, right? Where we're saying not only are we trying to take bias out of the system, but we're programming to take bias out of the system. And it took them ages. And he said, finally just gave up and said, look, can I just have an Asian female that's about 50 and not that good looking, right? Before he finally got to the image. And I was so horrified because I have drunk the Kool-Aid. I do believe in that AI can help us be the great equalizer. Every student can have a tutor. Everyone can have better access to healthcare, all that kind of stuff. And then we come up with such a simple example where we're like just back in the dark ages, right? So, yes. Obviously, we haven't quite solved it if that's the images that were coming back, but there you go.
Again, and I could come up with a load more of these examples. I'll just give you one. I was actually speaking to, her name's Akanksha, and she's actually going to be on the panel, our sister club. She asked ChatGPT, she's got a podcast, and she said, who runs this podcast? And it basically just presumed that it was a tech geek, a guy. And she was like, no, who runs this podcast? And the way it described it, it presumed that it wasn't a female.
Yeah.
Because she spoke to technology, she spoke to all these things, and I was just like, and she was furious. She was like, this is not okay.
No, it's not.
And I think that this is something that's probably not getting discussed enough at the pace it needs to get discussed at, because we're moving so fast. And I just don't want to see, for example, I think about recruitment, right? I think about if AI gets installed in all of the screening processes when people are sending their resumes in, what's it screening for? What's it looking for? If it's not trained to take in consideration like bias, we're going to see the same people going into the same pipelines, being called, overlooked. We've got to address this at quite a pace, or we just need to just slow down, which is not going to happen, because otherwise there's going to be bias in the AI and that's going to really have problematic consequences for individuals, and one of them is going to be women.
And I think, even more specifically, screening in versus screening out is really the only tool that we have at our disposal right now. I mean, before the advent of Gen AI, we were already, screening out names that might give us, an idea of the cultural heritage or the sexual background, etc. And as you say, that's obviously not a perfect system. So what do you need to be screening in for? Just in the same way you'd say, let's at least have one female on the, hiring panel. Or one female in the applicant list, how do we screen in so that we're actually bringing more opportunity to people who actually can probably do the job, but they're just getting missed?
I know. I think about it a lot. And that's why I'm just so passionate about getting females into tech, and I'm making sure that, you know, we are upskilling ourselves in AI. Because it was Catherine Boychuk that said it, 200,000 people are going to have to transition. That's in Australia alone. And I think that's going to be more. In CH Solutions, my recruitment company, we're actually recruiting for a head of AI at the moment.
Yeah.
And this is a phenomenally paid role.
Yep.
Amazingly paid role. And I'm searching and I'm not seeing many women. And I'm like, I'm the big advocate of getting diversity in all shortlists. And I'm like, well, I need more females in AI to get the diversity in the shortlist. Otherwise, I'm just going to be placing men into these head of AI roles. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to go back to 2000 and whenever I started in recruitment, I can't even remember, can't even count back that far, you know, where I was just placing a load of men. I don't want that to happen again.
Well, it's funny. And that exact scenario is probably what shifted my mind a little bit when I first, you know, really understood what really, as a result of my privilege, I should be accountable for, right? Because I grew up in this world where this wasn't even spoken about. And I'm like, oh, if I can do it, that, you know, then anyone else can do it. But then when you start to, you know, look at these hiring scenarios, you're like, well, you're never going to have the most accomplished female there because they had to be giving opportunities at stage X, Y, Z to be the best or most accomplished just from a purely, have you done the job before? How long have you done the job before, et cetera? Someone at some point needs to have a look at actually the skills and, as you said before, the transferable skills and maybe some of the other skills that are needed to do that role rather than, well, they've been the head of AI at another company, right? Maybe they've been a head of an innovation center. Maybe they've been a freaking CFO, you know, and but there's someone who understands where the opportunity lies with AI and can take that forward in an executive manner and actually convince their stakeholders that it's the right thing to do and where the opportunity lies.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. So let's just talk about like yourself for a moment as well. Like how do you stay up to date with what's going on? Like, you know, because obviously you've got to have so much knowledge to then pass on to, you know, your key account like Cole. So where are you getting your information from? How are you continuing to upskill? You mentioned learning is a really important piece. How are you learning and growing right now?
Yeah. So look, I mean, obviously working in a company like Microsoft, we get a lot of that. I wouldn't say shoved down our throats. We are encouraged to take advantage of the learning opportunities that are provided to us. And a lot of those are, you know, mandated in some ways, shape or form. But we also have a huge amount of resources and individuals that are very special. Like this space is moving so rapidly. And I could sit back and just say, well, I'll take that specialist with me to this meeting, or I'll get that information, or I'll ask Copilot just before I go into the meeting, just so I make sure, you know, I've got the headlines. But for me personally, like I am thirsting to stay ahead of the market. And that's maybe just something that's been with me in my entire career, or maybe that's because this is such an exciting space and I just love reading about, you know, what the advances are and where their opportunities lie. So we've got Microsoft stuff, we've got Microsoft Learn, and I'm sorry to be saying Microsoft, but these are the resources I use, right? But that's the learning opportunities are free. We also have a, you know, partnership with LinkedIn. Heaps of free opportunities there. And then I actually get across to as many customer events, things like the Sisterhood, you know, so many of the organizations are promoting different ways to actually skill yourself and understand what's going on. Like I just love hearing how business leaders are using it because I can take that then and then apply it to a different scenario or just have it for learning in my background. I also like to get across all the different industries, right? Just because I'm specifically supporting a customer in retail now, there were so many use cases that are transferable. And, you know, if I think again, you know, a little bit about my imposter syndrome, I sit down with an executive in retail and I like feel like I'm telling them how to suck eggs because they've gone on their innovation tours, their study tours, they're so well connected. They know better than me probably about a lot of things. But I'd go and explore something maybe in the finance industry or something in the manufacturing industry and I can go, hey, what about this? And it's all of a sudden a little bit of a bright spark. So I don't think I will or ever be able to stay ahead of my customers in everything. But if I don't try, I'll certainly fall well behind them. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's it, isn't it? It's like just trying to just sort of like, we can't know it all because things are changing on the daily, you know, probably on the hourly, you know, like and AI is going to continue to evolve at an absolutely rapid pace. So I guess like sort of, I guess one of my final sort of questions, it is like, you know, fast forward to say 10 years, How do you see, what's like an ideal scenario that's played out with AI for you personally? Like, it's fair, it's equitable, everyone's using it. You know, what does that look like for you?
Oh, I think you just said it, but let me give it a go. So I think new industries have sprung up, right? I don't know what those industries are. You can find heaps of, smarter analysts than I who have suggested some of them. But I think new industries have sprung up, and those new industries have created opportunities for people that would never have had the opportunity for financial independence, for wealth, to, you know, help their families live better lives. That's something that's important for me. I think the education system has totally transformed, because it's, someone told me this example of, it's like when the scientific calculators came out, right? You were using the old punch thing. Then the scientific calculators come out and they were banned. And then before you know it, you're allowed to use them in exams, right? That has to happen. And I think how quickly we can adapt to that in our education sector is going to determine how much, our future leaders are actually going to be able to lead this industry and find those opportunities for economic advancement and improvement of lives. I think my husband's finally used Copilot. That would be great if in 10 years he's finally had a go at that. My kids want to do something in STEM. I've never once suggested to them what they should do, but I would love it if they're taking advantage of this moment in time to actually, also help provide for themselves and their own families going forward.
Yeah, I do think that tech is such an enabler, and it's also going to be, it's well paid and, can really sort of set people up. And one thing I am very passionate about myself is making sure that women are financially independent and free as well, which tech can definitely do. So I guess final question, if someone's listening to this podcast right now, Chez, and they are, maybe they're in tech, maybe they're not, like, what is just something you would just recommend that they do sort of on the daily, on the weekly, just something that's going to really help them navigate this new world that we're moving into, whether it's a new skill, whether it's a mindset shift, something that you can really sort of leave the audience with today?
So what do you enjoy? What are you passionate about? And then I won't say Google, go to Bing Chat, Copilot's free on that now. And go and ask it, if I want to improve my skills in this particular area using AI, what are some of the applications? What are some of the courses? I know it's a really silly answer, but there's just so much out there, and I couldn't possibly give any advice, to meet each individual's needs. And then go and say, well, are there free courses? What are the certifications? What are the actual opportunities that I could come away with if I was to actually merge my passion with something in the world of AI, whether it be in industry or tech? As I said, can't answer that question for anyone, but there are some really smart AI tools out there that can, and at least it will be a starting guide.
Absolutely. I mean, literally you can, and it's all about how you prompt it, isn't it? This is what I've learned. Like, so if I say, for example, I was asking AI the other day about some financial advice, I'm thinking about purchasing another investment property. I was like, right, based on this and this and this and this, act like a number one financial advisor and mortgage broker and give me the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. And what it gave me, I was like, oh, that would have probably cost me about $3,000 or $4,000 to get that from my financial advisor. And it's pretty much spot on. I was like, it gave me the risk, the high risk, the low risk options. And I thought, wow, how...
Georgie, did you create that perfect prompt from the start, or did you have to iterate on it a little bit?
No, absolutely not. I continue to prompt it. And again, this is a skill of the future. I certainly am no prompt engineer, but I'm getting better. I'm starting to really understand how I can get... I don't just take the first answer. I think that's a key thing. I think when people are sort of playing around with AI, don't just take the first answer it gives you, prompt it. Tell it what you want. Tell it to think the way you want it to think. I think that's really, really key.
It's like my kids with the April Fool's Day.
Exactly.
Some great pranks, they'd probably get suspended for it. No, I'm a 10-year-old. I'm at school. I want to do this at school. Etc.
Exactly. Type in your financial goals. This is where I want to be in the next 10 years. Is this a great investment to help me get there? Yeah, I think there's so much we can use it for. And I just encourage everyone to start playing around with it. It's just really important. But Chez, So lovely to speak with you today. Thank you so much for being a part of our community. And obviously you're going to be on our Sisterhood Social panel as well, which is very exciting.
I am excited. There's some amazing talent on there. Can't wait to make them IRL as well. So
absolutely. So if you want to come and meet Chez, come to our upcoming event and you can come and talk to her all about AI and the future of tech and everything else. But where can I send people who want to connect with you before the event or after the event?
Sure. Just Francesca Salvo on LinkedIn. I don't know that there's too many in Melbourne. Francesca brackets Chez Salvo, I think I'm under. So yeah.
Well, hopefully there's not a load of deep fakes coming out soon.
I know,
so
right?
We're going to have the real Francesca Salvo soon. Verified.
I love it. That's right. Intra verified ID. It's me.
Correct. Oh God, that's a whole other topic in conversation. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Thank you, Georgie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.